Hey, and welcome to the third anniversary of the Three Old Geeks Podcast. We are recording on the day that the first episode or issue, if you will, dropped. And so we've got a cast of thousands here. But we've got the first of all, the two guys that I've been doing this with for 3 years, and I can't believe this has lasted this long.
What were the biggest odds on this making it 3 years?
Let's put it this way. I got some car money now. So, of course, we've got the Keeper of the Inner Sanctum, the Numbers Guy, and Keith, the numbers ain't going to work on this one, just so you know, we missed a couple episodes. Contrarian and no longer the Ruinator, Keith of Keith Skyvers. Keith, how are you?
I can't work under these conditions. Numbers are numbers. Stop it. Oh, if it's a word, he's got it right, but numbers, no. Doing great.
And, of course, the man who's always wrong with the Holes Collection, the Clown Prince of Collecting, the Pictures Guy, and the Dirty Old Geek, Brian Needs One. Brian, how are you?
Listen, children, to a story that was written long ago about a kingdom on a mountain and the valley far below.
One tin soldier rides away, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that movie needed
it
that song.
It should have rode away and never came back.
But it did.
I know.
And we bring back our very special returning champions, first of all. The Notorious Intergalactic Bounty Hunter and Brian's brother, Dr. Rich Sees One. Dr. Rich, how are you?
Outstanding. Thank you for having me. Again, thank you.
And, of course, the super fan and the most generous man we know, Mike. Mike, how are you?
Doing great. Let's get this started.
I have to ask the question that I typically ask of both of the whenever we have guests. Have you learned to mix a podcast yet?
Just this week.
Okay, you got my spot. I'm officially retiring because, of course, I am the long, long-suffering world's oldest kid sidekick. I am the words guy. My name is Lance, and I'm not even supposed to be here today. And welcome to the third year! So other than our momentous anniversary, Brian, do you have news for us?
We had one passing this week. We had no real news that came out of... Though last week, Dr. Rich was interested in the James Gunn 50-year plan for DC. Did you have something that you wanted to talk about?
No, I thought it was outstanding. You know what I find interesting about the whole process is the need, and I guess it's just something that has to happen, but the need to compare DC and Marvel, and I just think that the two are so far apart. Marvel has had 15 years of just success, and DC kind of up and down. But I'm very excited. I'm not a DC guy. I'm very excited to see what he comes up with and some of these off the beaten path type. It's not just Superman and Batman and Aquaman.
Yeah, they're going in a different direction. So, and it'll be interesting because they're focusing a lot on TV, which I find to be interesting.
Yeah, and James Gunn is amazing. So I think he's going to be... I do find it pretty interesting because he did throw a little shade at what they had done previously.
Yes.
And I didn't think that it was necessarily wrong, but I think it was Safran who said Batgirl was unreleasable. Like,
I saw that a couple times, too. It was unwatchable.
Unwatchable, right. And unreleasable. And
it would have hurt the character. It would have hurt the careers of the actors.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was supposedly so bad that the executives that were watching it kind of just said, okay, this is enough. Didn't want to get through the whole movie.
Yeah.
So that's stuff I saw online. I don't know if it's true, but...
Yeah, I saw the same stuff. Yeah. I found it interesting. So, but I'm looking forward to it. I thought it was awesome, and way to release it when you said they said they were going to release it in January. Literally the next day. I was like, okay. All I had to do was say something.
Well, we do have a passing. Big one this week. And Burt Bacharach. So, all I really have to say is, Burt, I say a little prayer for you forever and ever and ever.
All right, we've been threatened by the FCC enough times. No more singing.
They're not listening.
All right, so for this week's edition of the world famous, and I have the data to prove it, top three list, gentlemen, with 20 minutes on the timer to account for our two extra special guest stars here, what are your top three legal dramas? And do we qualify this as just TV, or can be TV and movies and the whole thing?
TV and movies.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
In that case, I've got a third. What are your top three legal dramas? And go!
Okay, number one for me. Well, number three for me. And I think this says something, is, of course, going to be You Can't Handle the Truth.
It's one of the greatest movies of all time, dude.
Yeah.
That was much higher on my list, but...
Yeah, no, that's number three.
That was the first movie that I actually thought that, like...
Tom Cruise?
Tom, thank you. I thought he was actually really good. Like, he wasn't just, like, Tom Cruise. He was, like, actually acting.
Because he was acting with Kevin Bacon. You got to step up your game when you're acting
with
Bacon.
That's true.
Well, Nicholson was Nicholson.
Yeah, but you know what? Think about how many actors could actually deliver that whole little speech on the stand. And just make it... By the end of it...
Joe Pesci.
It's goosebumps. You're fucking... He delivers it so well and so
He's
strong.
He's so arrogant and so, yeah.
Yeah. Doc?
I got a bunch. But, I'm going to go with the 1986 Legal Eagles. Robert Redford, Deborah Winger.
It was fun.
Daryl Hannah. That's exactly why I...
I remember seeing the trailer for that one. What was that just...
Daryl Hannah plays Chelsea Dearden, and she gets she's an artist, and it has to do with the art world. And there's a murder, and then there's a stolen painting, and Robert Redford is on his way up to be like the district attorney, and Deborah Winger is the defense attorney that's going to take on all the cases, and you end up finding out that it's a huge conspiracy, but it's just it's fun action. It's a comedy drama, and there are a number of fun courtroom scenes. I remember seeing it in the theater. I was in sixth grade, and it just always stuck. If it's on, I'll watch it. And fun movie, popcorn fun movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mike, what do you got?
Third for me, two of my favorite actors. Robert Duvall and Robert Downey Jr.,
great
The
movie.
Judge.
Yep.
The Judge.
That's a recent one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Great movie.
It's a great movie. Vincent D'Onofrio is in it as well. Robert Downey Jr. has left the family small town. He's a big city lawyer. His mom passes away. He goes back to his town for the funeral. While he's there, his father, Robert Duvall, who is the judge of the town, of the area, gets into a car accident and kills somebody. And basically, through the course, he's got Alzheimer's. Yeah. So you kind of go through the movie that if he is found out that, A, if he did it on purpose, or if he had as part of his sickness, he's worried about his legacy of all the cases that he's tried would get thrown out. And Robert Downey kind of has to get to the truth of what's going on with his dad and what actually happened to this person dying. So, yeah, it didn't get as much publicity and as exposure as I thought it should, but it's an excellent movie.
Cool. Keith, what do you got?
You want
me to go?
Yeah.
I originally thought we were just doing TV, so I'm going to go with the obvious one. Chung Chung? Nobody?
Chung Chung?
Chung Chung?
Oh, yeah. Law and Order.
Dude, Law and Order. Yeah. There's a reason it's been on for 20 years. Some of my favorite actors have come
through.
Anybody?
Donnie Yen?
Lenny Brusco is one of the great cops of all time that's ever been on TV to the point where they retired his badge when he died, and the New York Police Department retired his badge. Michael Moriarty, Sam Waterston, all the lawyers are great. And then you can't really... To get 20 years worth of material of just the weird shit that takes place in this country, I think there's something to be said about that.
I do not watch that show, but from my I've seen it because it's on all the time.
Right.
But from my understanding, it's 20 years where there's really it's individual. Like, it doesn't necessarily mean like there's a huge plot line.
It's a true procedural. There's only been a couple of times, and they started in the new season. They started getting a little more personal and stuff like that. But it was a true procedural where you like. Brian described the Night Stalkers, like you never saw Karl Koscheck go home and hang out at his apartment or cook dinner or whatever.
Right, okay.
It's a true procedural where you're just with these people during the course of the cases or whatever.
Yeah, you're with the cops while they're doing that.
SUV
they don't,
had
you,
more little, yeah. or SVU.
Yeah. You get parts of their story more. And character development in just the, when they're talking, you know, like, oh, did you get that thing cleared up with your wife? Well, I got the alimony thing is a, that would be it.
Okay.
But you wouldn't.
So it is.
Yeah.
So you could just watch an episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lenny Briscoe talked about his ex-wife for 30 years and then, but you never saw her.
Yeah.
Got it. Did you ever see him on Broadway singing? It's funny.
Yes, I have seen.
Because he was Broadway musical.
Oh, yes.
He was a song and dance man. He was Lumiere. I mean, Lumiere. Even I knew this. He was Lumiere in freaking Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast. Yes.
Okay. All right, Keith, what do you got?
Well, I had mostly TV. I'm going to go with, when did it come out? 2007 or something like Shark with what's his name? Well,
James Woods.
James Woods. James Woods. And Pennybaker from...
Pennybaker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ooh.
Yeah. And that was the shark. Literally, the
he was a defense lawyer who went over to the other side, and so he knew all the tricks. And it was really clever to look at how they'd show how defense lawyers would cause.
It was kind of like House for lawyers.
Yes, pretty much. Yeah.
Oh,
is that like one season, two seasons?
Two seasons. Yeah.
Oh, well, it's got to be somewhere.
Yeah, it is.
It was on CBS. Yeah, I'm sure it's on.
I think Paramount it's on Amazon. I was watching it not long ago.
Okay, so number two for me, and I would say it's the greatest, but obviously I've got one above it.
Is that how that works when you go numbers?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just to point that out
numbers
to you.
Numbers guy, not
numbers
sure.
Numbers guy, now that you know. And of course, it would be a play I would like to do if I could, and that's 12 Angry Men.
Oh, great choice.
Oh, yeah.
Took my number one.
Oh!
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on my
12 my Angry Men. Number
just,
one.
And the original.
Oh, yeah. Henry Fonda.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And every character actor and great actor from the 60s.
Lee Cobb, Martin Balsam, John Feather, E.G. Marshall, Jack Klugman, Jack Warden. I mean,
it's everybody.
So and they're all, and they
it's
don't even, you
so
don't know their names.
Good.
They're just the number.
Juror number one.
And it's in
two.
The same room the entire time.
So I said, I would love to do the play.
The topic that they have there is incredibly relevant to what is going. It translates. It ages well, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I saw it twice. Once in high school, and once, right. My son did a play. In high school, they did 12 Angry Jurors, and that's. So I went back and watched the movie again. Yeah.
They did a remake of it. I never watched it because I was like, I didn't want.
William Peterson's in it.
It's good.
Yeah.
Is it good?
I don't think I've seen that one.
You know what? It's hard to screw that one up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if you just sit and read it, it's just hard to screw it up.
I remember when I learned, the first time I learned about it was like, we learned about it in English class and we read the play.
Yeah.
You know.
Yes.
Well, the way they shoot that too, they shot it in, not only in the same room, but if you watch it, the camera angles are wider at the top and he shoots it. So you get more of an expanse. And then as the movie goes on, he lowers the camera down to the center, eye level. And then at the bottom of the movie, everything is shot below eye level, so he has to shoot up. Because he wants to get the sense of the claustrophobic that you're constantly in this room with these people. And it's becoming more and more tight.
The tension.
The tension. And I really never noticed that until I was actually on a jury, and I was a foreman of a jury for a very big medical malpractice, and it took us a while to come to a conclusion, but I had, out of the 12 of us, 10 people agreed and the other two people did not, and trying to get through those arguments and getting down to that point, I was like, oh my God, I'm in 12 Angry Men. You know, it was really,
Make me
really
want to do jury duty. It's amazing.
No, that was the malpractice one. There was a murder one too.
Wow,
that was down at 26 in California.
You can talk about that off mic here, so we don't get anybody in trouble or anything like that.
My second one is 2000s, based on a true story, Aaron Brockovich. I thought that it's directed by Steven Soderbergh, obviously Julia Roberts, and I absolutely loved as Ed Masry, Albert Finney in it. But it was just one. It's based on a true story. Two, I thought they did a great job with her, and you just kind of see how she gets wrapped up in this case. And it basically, in essence, it takes over her life, and the you just feel the responsibility that she feels the more that she gets involved and the more she meets these town folk who are coming up with just an ungodly number of medical illnesses, all related to what the waste that the electric company was dumping into the land that was affecting the water, and how they knew it and how they covered it up. And then they ended up winning, and it was, but the way they did it, I believe she won her Academy Award for it.
Yeah. Yes.
And just a really a great movie. I enjoyed it.
Oh, wow.
Well, my second one, I kind of went on a TV show that I loved watching. It wasn't one of the more intense dramas. It was short-lived, a couple seasons on TNT, Franklin and Bash.
Three seasons, yeah.
It was a three seasons, yeah. So, yes. You know.
Two young guys live in a beach house?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I kind of liked the whole angle
of.
Not
that movie.
No. Not the one that Brian watched. Not Franklin Basher.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
it was Franklin and Bash. I like the fact that Breckenmeyer, Paul
Glaser,
Paul Michael Gosselaar, Kumail Nanjiani.
Oh, from Saved by the Bell.
Yeah.
But they took the weird cases and they had to kind of figure out legally how to win for their clients and kind of, you know, go into different areas of the law that really wasn't the everyday kind of legal procedures.
Who's the head of the firm?
Malcolm McDowell.
Malcolm McDowell, yeah.
Yeah. So.
I remember that. Yeah, that one was cute.
That was
cute.
A fun show.
It was cute.
Yeah.
My number two is a show no one knows. Because
Keith watches all obscure television.
Can you guess what station it was on?
TBS.
Fox. Thank you, Fox. Yeah, it lasted one season. It's because that's Fox.
Boston Legal came out.
No, that wasn't Fox. And that lasted like six, seven seasons. Came out in 2004. It was called The Jury, and it was kind of interesting because you step into the case, and they give you the case, and then they give you the jury deliberating. The jury would come up with a verdict, and then they'd flash back to what actually happened. So you know if the jury got it right or got it wrong based on the...
I thought it was kind of a cool little
formula.
Oh, yeah. Because
they'd never done anything like that. You know, it's like... so many law shows on at that point. I thought that was really cool. Yeah, of course it was canceled. It had...
Because Keith liked it.
Yeah, it had Warren from Buffy on it. Adam Bush.
Yeah.
He played like... bailiff or something.
Oh, cool. I'm going to look that one up. All right, to cement my old man status, my number two is...
Kill a Mockingbird?
No, it's the all-time classic. It's Perry Mason.
Oh, I knew that was coming up. I didn't even touch that.
I watch it. It's literally on the old people's...
It's on every night.
It's on the old people's network every night. I watch it every night. It's got... I mean, Raymond Burr is just awesome.
Yeah, he always was.
William Hopper's freaking awesome. He and just it's the whole mystique of like the 50s and like the everybody looks great and they got great cars and
they're a little bit more respectful.
That was one of the things in the Panther Women that I picked up was they show all these people are in suits.
Yeah,
at the wrestling thing.
Yeah,
you know, it's not. You see the one guy who's not, but it was only one guy.
Yeah,
and everybody else is
it's
in
before
the
before they
slim
got into marketing,
like, cool.
Did T-shirts. Yeah,
and then the thing that fascinates me is it's like. Oh, you think of the 50s and it's all this sanitized stuff. And this show, guys ran around on their wives. You know, people murdered people for greed and for lust. And it's just...
Sleeping with their secretaries.
Sleeping with their secretaries and stuff. And it was just intriguing in itself in the stories, but just the atmosphere to me is like has a mystique to it.
Blondie was alive.
Damn good.
Number one for me, I'm going to lance it.
Oh, my God.
No, the one movie, I never picked the ending, and it just blew me away. Ed Norton's first film, Primal Fear.
I didn't even think of that
An one. Early Matthew McConaughey, where he's defending Samuel L. Jackson.
Lincoln Lawyer?
A Time to Kill.
I was wondering when that author, I forget the other.
Sandra Bullock is in that.
Yep. What's his name?
Who's the author?
Grisham?
Grisham, yeah.
Yeah.
I was wondering when Grisham was going to show up.
He's got a number
here.
Of really good. Unbelievable movie. Both of those movies, if you have not seen them, Richard Gere and Ed Norton. It's Ed Norton's first film. And he is unbelievable.
That has got one of the better twist endings.
Yes. Never saw it. And when he does it, I've loved him ever since. And then, Time to Kill.
Wow. That's a great one.
For me, I'm going the 1992 My Cousin Vinny.
Sorry. That's got to be on there.
It's
yeah.
just so, you know, Joe Pesci, you know,
the
Vincent
two of you.
Marissa, oh, yeah.
Marissa Tomei. Marissa and Fred Tomei. Gwynn.
You look at this card. It looks
so Fred
solid.
Gwynn.
Fred Gwynn is so good in this. Did you just say
Utes? Yeah. It's the way they deliver. The script is great. The way they deliver it, you just laugh throughout the whole damn thing. And they play it serious.
Yeah.
And then Marissa Tomei, absolutely gorgeous, and she was outstanding. And the end where he finally figures it out and then calls her up,
yeah,
and the attitude she gives, and then
you know I am
when she just busts into it.
When she figures it out.
Oh, when she figures it out and then goes through that whole spiel, you're just like, that was awesome. Yeah,
like,
that was amazing.
How often does positraction come up in conversation nowadays?
Right, never. The timing on the card. He goes, that's a BS question.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
That's because you don't know the answer.
Right. And there's no bad guy in the film. Like, no. The one guy doesn't like Joe Pesci.
The guys who killed
the guy. He doesn't
like
him.
Bad guys. Yeah,
but he's not an evil man. There's no bad guy in the film. It's just Joe Pesci proving that the guys didn't do it.
And then even in the end, the sheriff, he asked the sheriff for help, who then
goes
and helps him.
Yeah.
And they get the... Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And the way, and when he's like, I have got to get out of here. If I don't get out of here right now. Oh.
That was the whole thing. It was like, he's a New Yorker. He's in like a small town. He can't sleep because it's dead quiet.
Yes. Yeah.
And then he finally gets a good night's sleep because they put him in prison and there's like a riot or something. Yes. Like, that was great.
And when he's out, they're out in the middle of nowhere in that cabin and that screeching owl.
Yeah.
And he just busts out of the house. Shooting the gun, and he just empties the barrel, and it's not even shooting up. He's just shooting straight out. What?
Biological clock is ticking.
Oh,
that was
Marissa Tomei is so good
at
this.
Can we pile on this case?
What's your number one?
Number one for me is, you already said it, mentioned it, Kill a Mockingbird.
Okay.
Oh. I guess it's the old guy thing, but you know, I remember seeing that in high school the first time we had to read the book and we had to watch the movie, and it just stuck with me forever.
Yeah. Great friends Gregory with, Peck and, what's his name?
Gregory Peck?
The author.
Harper Lee's a lady.
Harper Lee, but she was great friends with Truman Capote.
Okay.
Truman Capote is in that book as the little guy, the person that she hangs out with. And that's the only book she ever wrote.
Actually.
Really?
No, there was two.
She wrote a second one and it just came out like recently.
Yes.
Like
right.
the last
but that
couple
was
of
it.
Years.
Right. That was it. She wrote that book and that was it.
Go out on top.
But yeah, her and Truman Capote were good friends. He's in that book.
And he's consistently, Atticus Finch is consistently... Like voted or not consistently, I would say, but he's voted the most heroic character in all of.
He's
and that was we read it in high school, and that was when we were just every time you were assigned a book in high school, you were just kind of like, oh.
And now they're canceling it.
And then you read that though, and you're like,
holy cow!
Wow, this was amazing. And then you see the movie, so good.
Yeah,
great choice.
They're canceling it and not reading it in schools anymore.
What's your number one, Keith?
I'm going to go my number one. I'm Dr. Riching it. Because he's here, I have to suck up to him. Want him to come back. It's all David E. Kelly's shows.
Yes.
You got Practice, you got Boston Legal, you got Ally McBeal. He worked on L.A. Law.
I struggled with not putting the Practice on.
Yeah. It's a great show.
Yep.
And Boston Legal... They tackled big cases. It was, but you know, Denny Crane made it funny. I wasn't gonna go with that, but my other choices got taken, and I just thought of another one. So, but yeah, I enjoyed all those shows. I mean, and they did have enough court to make legal drama.
Yeah.
All right. We don't got a lot of time left, so I'll keep it short and sweet. Witness for the prosecution. Agatha Christie's story, directed by one of my favorite directors, Billy Wilder, Tyrone Power, Marlene Dietrich, Charles Lawton is one of the greatest lawyers on screen of all time, and Elsa Lancaster, his actual wife, was his nurse, one of the great comedy duos of all time, and one of the great twist endings out of any court case movie or TV show ever. It's like an hour. It's like an hour and a half. Marlena Dietrich is freaking fantastic in it. It's top notch.
Speaking of twist endings, Presumed Innocent with Harrison Ford, Bobby Bonilla.
Oh, yes.
The ending of that is just, whoa, I didn't catch
Did not
didn't
see that
coming.
That was so good.
Anything else?
Oh, so much.
Yeah, there's a lot. No. There's a lot of honorable mentions, but.
Court's
all out. Right, well.
Court
that
is out.
Yeah. Court is adjourned. All right, so the podcast is about to get a lot worse, and by a lot worse, I mean a lot worse. Because we watched number 17 on Tubi's list of the worst movies of all time. This has made several lists of the movies worst movies of all time. And that is The Trial of Billy Jack from 1974. It was directed by its star, Tom Laughlin. It was written by its two stars, Tom Laughlin and Dolores Taylor, under aliases. And stars, Tom Laughlin, Dolores Taylor, and a cast of thousands. I will begin the segment by citing two reviews of its time, when it was released. Charles Champlin of the Los Angeles Times described the film as one of the longest, slowest, most pretentious, and self-congratulatory ego trips ever put on film. The running time is an excruciating 3 hours, which makes you wonder what the five, count 'em, five editors did for their money. Pauline Kael of The New Yorker declared, "This film probably represents the most extraordinary display of sanctimonious self-aggrandizement the screen has ever known." I hated this movie with every fiber of my being. I watched it because it was 3 hours long. I watched it across the three nights because I could only do about an hour at a time. And there's, for you MST guys, there is a joke on MST where the movie's so bad and Tom Servo starts yelling, "End! End! For the love of God, end!" The last half an hour was that for me. There is one shining moment in this entire one. It's a throwback to the original Billy Jack. I'll let you guys talk because otherwise I'm just going to be bitter.
And?
You know, you ask yourself, if this were my last act on earth, is this really what I want to do? So you learn on the one hand to be detached from the temporary things of this world. And on the other hand, you learn to appreciate every little thing in all the more. And that's Billy Jack. That's a direct quote from the movie.
I want you to ponder that. I don't want you just to throw that out there into the ether and say,
"That's deep.
Okay, that's bullshit. You know, that's just Billy Jack spouting shit. That's him talking out his ass." No, I want you to stop, rewind that, listen to it again, and then appreciate, meditate on it.
Because it's what I think every Sunday before I start the show.
And that
and then I go, "Fuck that, I'm dealing with these guys."
Yeah. No, I thought it was awful. I wanted the school to be blown up. I thought it was just like, hey, this is, we feel about this situation, and then we feel about this situation, and then and in every situation it was,
it's nothing but commentary.
It was commentary, and then after a while, I honestly thought they started to turn on each other and almost contradict the what they previously said, because by the end of it, it was like, "We don't want the head of the school, whatever her name was, to talk, because then we're going to be doing what she wants to do." And it just was, it was never ending, and you just wanted them all to shut up. It was,
they literally tried to take on every hot button topic of the era.
Yes.
And they solved them all.
You're gonna find that you're gonna try to find the fucking good side of this.
They
movie,
solved them all.
No,
wait a minute.
The bad is, this is where they came up with Superman Red and Superman Blue.
Probably. I'm gonna say that because you have to, when you tell where the blue flame goes, then he will tell you where it comes from.
Violet, you're Violet. What the fucking watching.
Okay, so first of all, we start this movie with the ripping down of Billy Jack, the literal tearing down of a man.
of all his pride.
No, stop.
They tear him down and they put him.
It's not working this time.
No, they cage him.
You can do this. You cannot say.
They put him in a cage and then they let him out and then he drives to the mountains.
He was a guest star in his own fucking movie. He's in it for like 15 minutes of this fucking 3 hours. You're not starting this. I'm not letting you do it.
Wait. So then they drop him off at the mountains where he climbs out of the car and he sees over at the edge of the cliff, Sister Cameltoe standing there with this hat.
I thought the vision, she was attractive.
She,
oh, I'm sorry.
Come on.
This
I want
was,
to hear this.
No, this
I'm
was,
waiting.
I did not.
Your ass isn't big enough to pull this out of.
No, you know what? There were so many contradictory messages into this that I really, I was watching it going, okay, it's a great philosophy. You solved child abuse because you loved them more? You loved them? And that solved child abuse.
All we are saying, give
this is why
chance.
The townspeople all want to burn your school. You self-righteous, sanctimonious fucks. And your teenagers. We could do it. Some of the amazing things that I found about this. Tom McLaughlin and Doris, what's her name? Sister Cameltoe.
Dolores Taylor.
Are man and wife.
Yes.
They had been married from 1954 to his death in 2013.
Yes.
That's pretty amazing.
59 years?
Yeah. And that's and this was pretty much it. As far as movies go.
Well, yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. This was the Billy Jack. I liked where it's where
Rich,
she was
you're
going to
get us thrown off the air.
When the, you know how much we have to pay for that?
We don't got Beatles money, okay?
We don't got Beatles money.
Or John Lennon money.
Yeah.
Let him come after it.
When they're wheeling her in the wheelchair, the both of them. And they fucking killed the little one-handed kid. They fucking killed him.
One shot.
Boom. Yeah. Not in the air.
She took a whole shotgun in the and then she's all of a sudden 3 days, not 48 hours later, she's in a wheelchair. It's like God.
When they're bringing her in the church, and she's like, "Sister Golden Hair, I fucked up my whole life, and I know you hate me, but we want you back." Get the head of the school.
Oh.
Sister Golden Hair. And she's crying, and they're crying, and it's like a 7-minute song. I was thinking DOA.
Could you imagine their sit down when the two of them were thinking about writing this movie? Like, I really want to get these messages across. And then he's like, and then intertwined, let's do some kung fu. let me do a fight.
Billy Jack, I got two or three fights.
We could start with like me getting my base. Like I know how to do this. Like I could kick an apple, and then in between that, then by the end of the movie, I kill a guy. I kick him in the throat. Kill him dead.
Quarter blood technique.
I was waiting for a cane to show up somewhere around there.
Oh, but he did use the cane.
It was yes.
He used the cane against the Asian man.
Well, I know when he's. I was waiting for another cane to show up later on, when he's fighting everyone. I was like, oh,
two hours and 50 minutes.
Of Mike, you're just. Are you stunned beyond words here, or do we traumatize you? Or
he loved it and he feels embarrassed.
No, I did not love this movie. I was letting Lance's rage. I thought there would be more erupting out of him. And everything that you guys said was true. It's way too long, way too heavy-handed. I mean, they touched on Vietnam War, the Americans killing the innocents in Vietnam, which, yeah, they touched on that. They touched on the treatment of the Indians. They touched on child abuse. They touched on homelessness. They touched on education. They touched on corporate greed. I mean,
police brutality.
I mean, it just went on and on and on and on.
They
and
had
on
statue
and
Little Feather.
And on and on and on and on. And I just felt like, you know, if I want to throw them the teeniest bone, at least, okay, you're trying to bring these things to light. And that was the 60s, the 70s, and it was, you know, after the hippie. No one's
into this movie, though.
But you're doing it in such a way that no one's going to listen to you because of the, it's so freaking long, and you're hitting them over the head multiple times over multiple things that you're just kind of destroying any hope you have about any kind of message you want to get across.
Yes.
So the interesting well thing put. To me...
That's a great message.
If we're going to look at it, because we have to look at, as Lance said, it's a product of its time. This film came out around the same time as...
1974.
Hitman.
Yes.
The difference between the two films was incredible.
Night and day. Night and day.
Is that a no. black and white thing, or what are you saying?
No, I'm saying okay. night just day. Not black and white.
I thought maybe we're...
The 70s were a pretentious time.
Yes, they were.
Because you were coming out of the 60s.
That's how it usually works.
Well, yeah, but the 60s were a clusterfuck.
Well, no, and you could tell. The original Billy Jack movie was a sleeper hit.
Yes.
And the studio gave Tom Laughlin a bunch of money to do whatever you want. You've got this hit with no money. We're going to give you some money this time. And he
spent it.
Spent every dime of it on 3 hours worth of film.
Did you see the special effects in this?
You mean that bus on blue fire flame, was
amazing. Floating blue flame. And wait, when he turned blue and he turned red...
Oh,
and
snake.
He had to face himself.
And the snake exploding.
The snake exploding.
Yeah. The bats crawling over.
The old Indian guy laughing. Ha 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 ha. Yeah. I mean, that was CGI.
It must have.
This was a commercial success.
It was a commercial success. Yes,
You're
it was.
You're kidding me.
No. This. It was. Yeah. No. It made money.
It had where they said a $2.5 million budget. It made almost $10 million.
Yeah. It made money.
There's
this
hope for
absolutely
us.
Did.
There's hope for us.
No, no. We'd have to go back in time to the 70s.
It just so was so boring at times. It's
at times?
Well, there was a couple.
There were times.
There were times I think like the fight with the guys at the wherever they were, the country club or whatever the hell that place was. I thought that was at least watchable. But the you know, when they're arguing back and forth, you know, yelling at each other, like you said, when they didn't want the woman to talk, it's just a bunch of screaming. It's like the View turned up to 10. It was, you can't understand what anybody's saying. They're yelling at each other. It's like, why? What the hell is the point of this? Just turn it off. Move to the next scene. Do something. But it was just mind-numbingly boring.
And I thought it was interesting, the part where, and I thought tonally it was different from the entire movie, when the plumber comes into the school, and then there's the whole hardcore sex scene. Oh, yeah. Oh wait, no, I was...
You got distracted again, Ryan.
You flip channels? You flip channels again?
You flip channels.
No, I remember what I was doing while I was watching this. Yeah, the 70s were pretentious. You know what? I took it as a product of its time. I really did. And a lot of it I laughed at, and it was just fucking horrific.
And there were things in there that was just hard to watch, too. I mean, the kid getting shot out of all, like you said, all the kids, all the people that get shot, the one kid who's an actual small child, and it's obvious it wasn't CGI that he didn't have a hand. That's a kid that you kill with one bullet.
Well, you had to, because that was the emotional thing.
Right. Yeah. And you have the guy that shot him was the one National Guard who had left his house earlier and kissed his wife and kid goodbye, and then he's the one that didn't want to shoot. His sergeant puts a gun to his head and says, "Don't shoot in the air." He just kind of, not really looking where he's shooting, he just fires a gun and it kills the kid.
And then the bunny hops away.
Yeah.
The bunny hops away. And I thought that was the biggest metaphor in the film, right there. Right? It said it all. The bunny hopping away.
I thought that was just, for me, it was just kind of, I didn't really want to end up watching that. At the beginning, his whole speech during the trial about the the atrocities in Vietnam, which, you know, it's always been well documented what happened, and war is horrible, but it made me want to look like, is he making this up or this actually really happened? So I looked it up. It really did happen. It really was as bad as they kind of played it. And it's like, okay, so what was the point of it? What, you put this in there, this is a movie, you're supposed to be entertaining. What's the point of putting this in?
You know what, and I just thought?
To make your audience feel like crap? I mean, that's kind of, if you did.
No, you know what I find interesting, and what I've always found interesting, and especially now, and I think it's topical to now, is that we have always known that the government does this kind of shit.
Absolutely.
This is not a conspiracy theory. This is not, right. Politicians are not wonderful people. They're not people that we need to put up on pedestals. They're lying fucking crooks who line their pockets. We fucking know this. We put up with it. We have always put up with it. We will always put up with it. At a time where the politics is the most divisive it has ever been in the history of ever. We watch something like this and say, okay, this was going on 50 years ago.
Right, exactly.
There's no change. There's been no change. This kind of shit has been happening for as long as shit has been happening. And it was happening before that. It was happening before Vietnam. Talking about the atrocities committed by the Japanese, by the Germans, by the Americans. The only reason we don't call it atrocities is because we won. But fuck you. The shit. So what I'm saying is that I think that showing that, and especially at that time, you're coming out of the 60s where it's the 50s was this kind of wonderful, magical time that we all look at and go, oh, life was perfect then. It wasn't. The 60s exposed what was going on in the 50s, and coming into the 70s is where you had, with Watergate and all that kind of shit going on, you now have a press that's tearing into a president, which has never done that.
Right.
In the history of the presidency. They put him down, but they never actually went after. So I think that for the time and how it relates to today, yeah, I think that there was a lot to say in this movie. Do I necessarily think that... I think that if she would have let Tom Laughlin have more of his Billy Jack parts, it would have been a better movie. Because when he wanted to, you know, kick the guy's leg, that was fun.
Okay. The one part of this movie was the him talking to the 6'8" guy.
Yes.
And really? Okay, we can't just talk this? Okay, well, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to kick you right in the thigh right there with my knee, and you're going to go down like a sand. That entire three, if you could isolate that this movie down to like that 3 minutes.
That should have been the trailer.
That should have been the trailer.
But that's basically the same as first movie, yeah. Which is I'm going to take this right leg and I'll put it on your left side of your face. Or yeah. It's the same exact thing, except he's not kicking as high. He's going for his knee instead of his face.
Well, that's how you strike big guys.
But if you look, the guy with the mustache, the cowboy with the mustache,
yeah.
He was kind of the Baby Huey parallel. Because he should have been taken out. Quickly, he hits the girl. You know, that's the guy he wanted. He's got to die.
Well, the part when they...
He gets stabbed and thrown through a window. That can't be good.
Well, he dies.
Okay.
Yeah, he dies.
And they go on Indian land. The family's starving, so the Indian gets put in jail because he goes on to land to kill a deer.
Which I didn't think was a thing since, like, Robin Hood times something like that.
Right, right. And then... So the corporate guys go on there. There's a party, and they have the bus, and they unload.
Awkward scene.
Yeah, that was awkward.
Yeah, awkward scene. And then you see, you know, three or four deer. They're laying on the ground. They don't even have them cleaned or gutted like any hunter would have.
Yeah.
This is what we're having for dinner, right? It would have been done, clean and hunted. Nope. They're just, the animals are lying there. Flies are buzzing around them, and you're kind of like, all right. First of all, I know it was the 70s. I know it was pretentious. I know it was very egotistical. But if anybody that was a true hunter that wanted to go get that would not waste three deer and just have, well, I need to have the trophy head and we're not going to eat the meat or cover up in the steaks. We're going to have venison tonight. No, they're just rotting on the ground. And it's kind of like took me out of it, like this would never happen.
Yeah. The one thing I would say is film, like... books like radio, like today with social media. It's a medium for communicating an issue that you have. And I think where this ends up just being a massive fail in how they executed is that they took, instead of one solid point, they took 42 things that are awful in this world, and they talked about every single one of them. And that's why it was 3 hours, and that's why it was such a massive fail. At one point, you have a high school student who says, you know, we shouldn't be violent. And then by the end of the movie, the same student right. says, you know, talking through things, it doesn't work. We should be violent. And I was just like, this is never going to end. And that's where I think it's the points that they have were important points. And they did such a terrible job by trying to talk about every single one of them that you don't care about any of them.
Exactly.
Obviously, you don't watch TikTok. Because no. if you watch TikTok, you would see TikTok. How that happens. How it goes from all we are saying is give peace a chance to cut off their fucking balls. You see it all the time on TikTok because people get crushed.
But see,
they get crushed by the man.
They ended it that way. So it was almost like a
I'm getting crushed by this awful. Segment right now.
Yes.
Like, this is like, almost as like, long as the movie.
This segment is going as long as this movie. End this! I'm not even giving it a star because it got made. Zero fucking stars.
Oh, a 3.5. This is beautiful in what it brings up and what it shows us about ourselves and about humanity
so
as a whole.
Rich, do you need a gig?
I'll see you guys next week.
Right, we need to talk.
This is a 1 star. And that's just because, like you guys said in the past, it got made.
I give it 1 star because it got made. And even though they did it in a very, very, very bad way, they tried to make some points and get some information across, but it's still a 1 star movie.
They solved child abuse. I wish you guys would think about that before you're rating it as 1 star. They solve child abuse.
Keith, would you please, give me a star rating so I can end this fucking segment.
They solve child abuse.
Everyone's got great points here.
It goes on. Should we start rolling credits?
I will.
What was at the end?
I think I would more agree with the 1 points than the 3.5.
If the credits are too long. If the credits are too long
this
in this
segment
podcast,
didn't really happen.
Okay. But I am one tin soldier, and I am riding away right now.
All we are saying is give.
All right, for this anniversary edition, Sunday Afternoon Kung Fu Theater has morphed into Sunday Afternoon Exploitation Theater.
Woohoo!
Because we watched 1972's Hitman, written and directed by George Armitage, starring podcast favorites Bernie Casey and Pam Grier. This is an interpretation of the book Jack's Return Home by Ted Lewis, and that is also what Get Carter was based off of. And being a huge fan of Get Carter, this is essentially the blaxploitation version of that film, with a big difference at the end.
Yeah, the ending changed.
But you have a criminal returning to bury his dead brother and finds out that his brother did not, in fact, die in a drunken automobile accident, that he was murdered by crime people.
Dun-dun!
Oh, I hate the crime people.
The crime people are always
I
bad.
I couldn't think of criminal at the time.
The crime people are bad.
3 years of the word guy.
3 years of the word guy, and you just finally wronged the right out of me, to quote Aerosmith. All right, so, yes, this is a direct... I mean, this is there are some scenes that are almost shot for shot with Get Carter on this.
It was the script.
It was the script, and you essentially transferred this from, you know... I forget where it's like the Midlands in England to 1970s, you know, Watts in L.A. Yes. type of thing. But I've been waiting to watch this movie for a while, and I was not disappointed. I really like this one.
Bernie Casey was originally supposed to direct it. They wanted to, but they would not give it to an untried director. So George Armitage stepped in.
Yes, no,
and
George
the way
Armitage.
He made... this different from Get Carter, which was they just gave him the script for Get Carter. That was it. Is that he let the actors improvise the lines so that you got that Watts feel.
Yeah.
Which is what they wanted. A lot of people complain about that, but...
Oh, no, I watched a lot of blaxploitation movies, and this one, I'm disappointed that I had not seen it up until this point. Because this, I thought, as a fan of Get Carter, you know, this is a great interpretation of it. It works, you know.
Have you read the book?
I have not. I'm literally going to pick up the book this week. I actually am finishing one, but I'm going to pick that one up because I want to read it.
Yeah, it was one that, and then to throw in, the, of course, because we try anytime we can to throw in a comic book connection to this. Okay, we never have, but I think it's a new thing that we should, we should probably try to start.
So third season.
There is a comic book connection to this, and that is Alan Moore's League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, 1969. The character Jack in the book is Jack.
But they could not
give him his name because of copyright problems. So they just call him Jack.
Huh.
Didn't notice that.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, there you go. I'm fucking... Oh! And then I have to give us our other one. Our connection to the Swingin' Cheerleaders.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck yeah! Rochelle! And y'all! Tried out for the Swingin' Cheerleaders. She didn't make it.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say Rochelle was the gal from Swingin' Cheerleaders.
No, she tried out.
They say, "Oh, you mean girl at tryout?"
Girl at tryout. So, yeah, remember when the three girls were trying out?
Yeah,
yeah. She was. Well, obviously the.
Okay, so she wasn't. She wasn't.
Yeah, she wasn't Swingin' Cheerleaders
for a nanosecond.
She didn't make the team though.
Yeah.
All right.
She did not. Joe made, and we liked Joe. That was no average Joe. But I'll take a
three
cup
years.
Of Joe.
Yeah.
3 years.
I will say when you have guests on your podcast and you say that this is going to be, you know, this is taking place of the Kung Fu movie, you may, since you're the one who divvies out the homework, you may want to just explain, hey, this isn't a Kung Fu movie. There's no Kung Fu in it at all.
Were you disappointed that there was no kung fu in this, Dr. Rich?
No, I was disappointed, especially since there's more kung fu in the trial of Billy Jack than in Hitman. But I didn't know what...
That there was 2 minutes of fucking kung fu in the trial of Billy Jack and there's no kung fu in this?
Yes.
Okay.
I was like, what?
As long as you can establish
more than 2 minutes. Am I getting pumped?
It was a four-hour movie.
Get the wrong. That's why I kept texting. Like,
which Hitman is it?
And I did the same thing with Keith because I came in here on
Wednesday.
You
gotta put the year if there's more than one.
And I was like, wait a minute. There's a Hitman with Jet Li from the early 90s. Is this the one we're supposed to be watching?
That would have made more sense.
Well, okay. We for whatever reason we decided to pivot away from kung fu movies. So yes, we watched this one because we were talking about it.
It was one of the movies.
Exploitation Sundays is coming soon.
No, Lance said that's a movie I want to watch, and we had some wiggle room, so that's why we stuck it in. We stuck it in place of
Lance. You saw that. You
the
Kung
Fu Theater because Lance didn't have time to watch two movies.
We're getting a little too BTS here, fellas.
But no, because you ask.
Yes.
Obviously,
Asian band BTS.
I would think that if you're a guest on the show, you wouldn't come on here and fucking whine and grouse and whinge. But obviously, I'm wrong about that too.
Oh, who's doing who a favor? We have a line outside the door. They just give us something to talk about.
When we changed it, and then we were like, "Oh, it's the third anniversary." Well, let's see if we can get Mike and Rich on.
No, I thought it was. I actually enjoyed the movie, but I was like, I kept saying, like, "Why is this in? Why is this under the category of the kung fu? Like, there's none. What?" Am I watching the right movie? I said it numerous times to Lisa and Ty.
Let's put it this way. This was a 5-minute decision. I was walking out the door where they're like, "Oh, it's our anniversary. Let's get Rich and Mike."
Yeah.
So the decision to watch this movie was like 5 minutes of thought. You two were like a nanosecond. just so you know.
Rich, Dr. Blame, Rich, we're a nanosecond of thought.
Yes.
You guys are at, we're literally an afterthought.
That's more than he gives anyone else, so you guys should feel.
Hey, I appreciate it.
That being said, and this not being a kung fu movie, what'd you guys think? Had not, let me ask you this. Had either one of you seen Get Carter, the British movie?
Not the British version, okay. No.
No. Go ahead, Mike.
There were scenes in there that were funny and I enjoyed watching, but my overall take on the movie was I didn't really care for it.
Okay.
The dog fighting scene, I thought, yeah, I know it's the 70s. That was rough to watch. I think my wife got up and walked
that
out
was cut
that
out. So did Kathy. That was cut out of UK.
Yeah. That was not in.
And the part where his niece, I didn't see that coming. I didn't think they were going to go shoot his niece in the head.
Yes.
That was kind of rough. And maybe they needed it to explain why he sets him up and finally has the two gangs fighting each other. But, I know it was a different time. I get that, but it seemed kind of choppy. It seemed like the script was maybe all over the place. I don't know. Did you get the same impression of it, or?
Yes.
Dr. Rich?
What I really liked was Bernie Casey. I've always liked him in the movies that he's been in. I enjoyed, Pam Grier is gorgeous. And so she seemed like she had kind of a small, kind of an odd little part.
It was way off her normal roles.
Yes. Yeah, she was almost like a bit player.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. And, she was. But yet she's, because of her name, she's.
Yeah.
And I thought that the, like, where they were going with it and how he was approaching it was kind of wonky.
Yeah.
And, like, he's an ex-cop who just doesn't really, like, the way he's trying to come up with it. And then at the end there, I did like the, hey, I'm Pam Grier, I'm going to show you, I got a surprise for you. And then it kind of clicks. And then he puts it together. Then he just goes full on savage.
Yeah,
fuck you all, dude.
And lets her go in the middle of a field where there's a lion.
Yeah.
And he just starts killing everybody. But I liked, because they tied it up. So from that standpoint, I liked it, but I would agree with Mike. It was just kind of, there was parts of it that you're just like, what is going on here? How many times can the same two thugs get their ass kicked and they just kind of keep coming back?
Maybe Huey.
Roger E. Mosley, showing up and with a hat and he gets shot. And I think the bullet went through the hat and not his head. It was, he just grazed him. There were some funny lines in it. You know, there was the whole, you know how I like my men proud and erect. I like when he leaves the one in the hotel, he gets up to leave, yeah. And she's like, I'm all ready and I'm laying here. What am I supposed to do with, hold my pinky?
Use my finger.
And he goes proud and erect. So, there were some funny parts. I think that when they were drunk in the car driving.
The part when they were drunk in the car driving, Brian, you always say, like, you can see when people are acting.
Yes.
Oh, that was the worst drunk scene that I've
terrible.
Ever seen.
Yeah.
That was
terrible.
Okay, act drunk here, guys. And they tried to act drunk.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Need subtitles.
Personal favorite was they were drinking 10 High whiskey, which was an old 70s whiskey. That's what my dad used to drink. So I kind of.
Did he sound like that when he drank
it? You come up with the most interesting shit. Yeah, man. Wow. You really do. I go, wow. I'm still thinking about the fucking, what was the LaToy that you shoot and his pants fall off?
I forget the name.
Hands up, Harry.
Hands up, Harry.
Hands up, Harry. Yeah.
Hands up, Harry.
You're fucking kidding me. That was great.
All right, so we got mixed reviews here. Keith, you aren't saying much.
Oh, I've been saying stuff. I liked it. I've seen a lot of blaxploitation films. This is probably not on top of my list because there's more ones that have more action. But I did like the way he turned the gangs against each other more or less at the end. I thought that was a great setup. It kept him out of harm's way. Meanwhile, dealt with everything. So,
if you want to tie it into a comic book, I mean, I don't know if this is the direction Brian wanted to go, but the guy, he called him the Ice Cream Man, right? And I'm thinking about the Ice Cream Man comic and, you know, I guess it didn't work, but.
You got to kind of have a place in your heart for blaxploitation flicks to get into these.
I always try to look at movies in the time period and for the audience that they were for. And to me, this was like,
it was
beautiful. It was great.
You have a lot of great, great actors who,
the character actor. I mean, they
yes.
Yeah. Wasn't the Baby Huey, wasn't he the chopper pilot in Magnum P.I.?
Yes, he was. Yep.
And the white guy in the back of the car, he looked familiar.
He was Vincent Garano.
Oh, and the
he's the corrupt
and the oh, the cop.
The cop.
Yeah.
Oh, the cop.
Yeah. The cop was Paul
Gleason. Paul Gleason.
I forgot about
Paul
Gleason.
And he was I don't remember ever seeing him that young before. That was weird. That was like, holy cow, that's, you know, Principal what's his name, you know, as a 20-year-old guy or whatever.
Yeah, Principal from Breakfast Club.
Carmen Arganziano. I can't even, but you look at his picture and you go, I know who he is.
Yeah. I recognize his face, but I couldn't picture where because this is 72.
This is 72.
It's 50 years ago.
I loved what they did with the ending.
And, okay, Manny J from Tampa Bay, shame on you. You have never seen Get Carter. We are not going to reveal the end of this because it's the exact opposite of Get Carter. But, yes, the end is different.
And it was beautiful.
I thought it was
beautiful. And it was just, it fits so well as you're watching. You're going, oh.
Yeah.
No.
And the ending, for me, I wrote down it took 1 hour and 10 minutes for the movie to get really interesting. And I think for me, the point at that was he realizes, like you said, in the theater, it clicks. After that point, you know, things got real.
And then it turns into a 70s revenge deal.
I agree with you.
Right.
That, 100%.
But the first hour and 10 minutes, it was like...
The part I didn't understand, they didn't need, it was him calling his girlfriend who's like in the porn industry or something like that.
They did it. Now I want to read the book because that is in both movies.
I was about to say, yeah, but it really didn't apply here at all. Really.
I think that was just being sexy 70s.
I mean,
stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if it tied to the movie they watched and somehow that came back or something, that'd be more interesting.
I thought it was a shame that he killed Pam Grier.
No, it's always
dude.
A
Pam Grier got eaten by a lion.
Fucking a great lion. Ending. That was a great ending. But
a lion in L.A. I know it's the '70s, but free range, open. You know,
there was have a those somewhere.
Well, they
have safari, like a safari park.
Safaris, right? Yeah. They have those drive-through safaris. But I've seen where, and I've been through drive-through safaris where the bears are loose, but never where there's a lion or a tiger.
The 70s,
sitting there loose.
They didn't care.
Yeah, just let the
people
kids
walked.
Out,
people
take a
walked
picture.
Around with lions on leashes.
There were serial killers everywhere. You're gonna die somehow.
Seatbelts
were not used in the 70s.
Exactly.
You know
that. Yeah. Was Pam Grier's character though? To me, I always got the sense that she really didn't know.
That she didn't know.
No,
and
she didn't
so
know.
That's
like,
why I was
no.
Like,
she
why kill
she didn't
her?
Know it was Bernie Casey. She didn't know yes. that Rochelle was Bernie Casey's.
But
no. niece.
She did it to somebody.
But she did it to
somebody.
Right, and yes. I think his point was you took a kid off the street,
shoved her in this.
You're right. You basically drugged her up, yeah. raped her, and that's how
and
you thought that was.
Okay,
fine.
So
and
that's why he
didn't care.
See, I was trying to. Did I miss a connection? To her knowing.
No,
but you got the connection when she's the one sitting there, like rubbing her head while the guy's raping her.
Yes, right. I understood his point, but I thought maybe like, because to me, she didn't know that they ended up killing the brother and any of that.
At that point, it was like,
he
didn't
knew
care.
That's
if
right.
this is what you do, then
Rochelle
the lion
wasn't
gets
the first either, I'm sure.
Yeah, I was fine with her getting eaten by the lion. I thought it was... out of nowhere. I was like, wow, that is fucking sad.
All right, well, we swerved you guys. We didn't get you the Kung Fu movie. We got you this. What, we'll call this on
a B-movie scale?
Let's call it a B-movie scale.
I would say that, you know what, the meandering script, the fact that it took an hour and 10 minutes to get into the action, but you do have Bernie Casey to watch and a lot of really great actors. Still going to go probably a 3.
Okay.
3, based on the fact that Bernie Casey and then Pam Grier.
Okay.
I'll go 3.5.
I have to go lower. I'm sorry. It's one that got made and 2, Pam Grier, Bernie Casey, 2.
2? I'm gonna go with you guys. I'm gonna say
That is two in and of itself. Yeah, right now.
But I had to. But I had to see Bernie Casey's ass two or three times in
and
the
you
movie.
Got to see his ball sack.
Yeah, so
Bernie Casey's ball sack.
That kind of knocks it down for
Bernie's
me.
Bernie's ball
bit.
Sack.
So I'm gonna go 3 stars, but just for Bernie Casey's suits alone.
Oh,
3.5.
His hat.
Yeah. All right, that was our first edition of Sunday Afternoon Exploitation Theater. Let us know what you think. All right, so for our deep dive into the luchadora genre, we watched 1967's Las Mujeres Panteras, also known as The Panther Women. Again, directed by Rene Cardona, written by Alfredo Salazar. And we lost Loretta on this one. Yes. They had a fill-in for Loretta. So then we have Ariadne Velter, the returning Elizabeth Campbell, and the very exotic Tongo Lele.
Tongo!
Yes. Tongo!
Tongo!
So we have the cult of the Panther Goddess, who is attempting to resurrect their chieftain or sorcerer or whatever, who's just essentially another Aztec mummy. We have got the tag
team. Whoa!
Yeah, I went there. I went there,
just
pal.
Just another. They're Whoa. All the same.
I didn't even put that together. Like. But yes, this was like wrestling women and Aztec mummy.
However, with one major improvement.
What was that?
Angle.
On hell?
Where?
On hell. This one included our very first masked heroic luchador.
Angle.
El Angel.
Superhero.
He was a superhero. He was Batman.
He was Batman. I have it. The Mexican Batman.
He was great.
He was fucking so awesome, good.
Dude. He was fucking great. The bulletproof fireproof cape.
It is made from a special metal that is both bulletproof and fireproof, but lightweight.
Bendium.
So the reason I love these movies is the whole, there is nothing weird about, oh, I'm going to come see you to talk about this investigation. And El Angel is in his apartment. He's got his laboratory set up. No shirt with the mask on.
Laboratory!
Fucking awesome.
Wait, let me change.
Yeah. He takes off the cape. Fucking awesome. Fucking awesome. I love these movies.
Oh, what a man.
I love the line, I'm in the service of justice, and justice has no face.
That wasn't a bad line. That could have been a dark man or something like that.
Yeah, when she asked him, like, why do you wear a mask? Yeah, so I liked it. I thought it was a very entertaining movie. It was, and I think Keith and I talked about this. I couldn't figure out, like, this should be on Svengoolie right now.
Yes. I looked, if Svengoolie ever had this on. I looked, this is a Svengoolie movie.
Absolutely. Well, you've got the two women who can transform into panthers.
Oh, that was funny.
They can't beat them because they don't know that they can turn into panthers.
So, Rich, when you're listening to this, get on it. Come on.
And God damn it, now I can't remember what they were called, but I kept yelling.
Las Sombras.
Huh?
Las Sombras.
Las Sombras?
The Shadows.
The Shadows.
The Shadows, yeah.
Las Sombras.
Because I kept yelling that out. Las Sombras! While I was watching it. Nobody was home.
Which is probably a good thing because they'd be looking at you like the way I'm looking at you right now.
Las Sombras!
Everyone. It was either that or Pietra de Santas with the little girl. Her name.
Oh, yeah.
Pietra de Santas girl. Get the Pietra de Santas.
Yeah, so the cult of the Panther Goddess has to slay the bloodline of
Pietra de Santas.
Thank you. In order to fully revive their sorcerer leader or whatever. And they kill the uncle, they kill the
cousin.
The cousin, the nephew or whatever, and then they kidnap the little girl so that the zombie final,
because she wasn't Gloria Venus, she was like Greta Venus.
Yes.
Yeah. I miss the other Venus.
I do, too.
I did, too.
Yeah.
You know what? I miss that stance that she had.
Yeah.
So the two girls, heroines, those were different actors?
No.
Those are the same?
The American one was
Elizabeth Campbell.
The big
Golden Ruby.
Golden Ruby was the original.
The one same. In the light caster. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. She was the original, but
her and
Loretta Venus was not there.
Loretta.
She was not there.
Crusher Loretta.
They did have the I want blood guy.
Yeah, he wasn't saying that. Yeah.
He wasn't saying
He's
that, but he was there.
Too,
yeah. Yeah. And I love how they show outside the ring. And the people are always
with the collar on. Yeah. They're watching.
There's a guy who looked like he was James Lipton.
And they show the one guy first when he's doing, and I thought it was a great transition. He's doing the cape with the flame, and then the guy's lighting the cigarette, and I was like, he doesn't smoke. I can tell he doesn't smoke because you don't light a cigarette that way. And I hate when they do that in movies. He doesn't smoke, and then he. And I went, okay, you're just wasting it. You're fucking wasting it.
Wow.
Well, someone's triggered.
Yeah.
I will
stop smoking 5 months ago.
Exactly. If you're going to smoke on TV, just smoke. You can
so
do it.
So this is your second Luchador movie. Mike, have you been following along with the other ones, or is this your first one?
No, this is my first one.
All right.
So, we love our Luchador movies.
So what did you think of this? You said it was entertaining, you think?
Yeah, I like the fact that it seemed to be not only just a wrestling movie, but it's a horror movie, a wrestling movie, a superhero movie, and a points of comedy.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. The comedy
is... Manuel Loco Valdez.
I mean, the
gay man?
Yeah.
They always pair Elizabeth...
With a little game,
with a little short guy to kind of get that comedy stature thing.
That guy was like, he's calling her, my tall lovely, and she's like, you mental midget.
Yeah.
You know, I liked that interaction. It was kind of like a Don Knotts character, where he's scared all the time, like, oh, let's not go this way. Yeah.
I wrote down facial expressions because he always had these crazy facial expressions.
Yes.
And at one point, his line is, I'm sweating out the fear.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, do I like that? Because would the movie play off better if you didn't have... Because he was too over the top for me.
What about this movie wasn't over the top?
No, I need not that. And then I believe everything, especially on
Panther
that.
Woman? Panther Woman turning Panther?
No, I I thought, what I had thought before too was there's too much wrestling until I saw the camel clutch. They changed it up and the classic Iron Sheik move, the camel clutch, and of course you're going to win the match.
Dude, it's the camel clutch.
This is my second one. I got to say, I am enjoying, I'm enjoying these movies. I had more fun watching this movie than the previous one, and I so far they've been a lot of fun.
I am so disappointed. This was the last of the Golden Ruby movies, and so
she's
I know
so hot but, too.
Fucking,
she's been in a million movies, so.
But you got Loretta Venus and Golden Ruby, and they need to be a series of movies that needs to happen in life now.
We need to find. I don't know if you get that combination of wrestler and super attractive. I mean, there's plenty of them out there now, but, you know.
It just needs to happen. They are international super spies, those two.
You need to get Richard.
You're the one who always says this needs to be a comic book, dude.
Yeah, it needs to be a comic book. That needs
to be. This needs to be on Svengoolie.
I agree with you.
It needs to bring awareness to it.
You know... Fucking Hollywood can't do anything original.
So why don't they steal this?
Yes.
Steal this. Because these four movies have been so much fun.
The car chase in it. I know it wasn't a chase.
They drive like maniacs.
All the time. He's got the convertible, which is basically the Batmobile or the Luchador mobile.
Yeah.
They're driving like maniacs through the street because I don't think they sped up the film. I think they were actually just driving fast.
Oh, this was just practical. This was a couple of guys driving real fast.
Yeah. Just the stuff when he jumps down into the hay and they light it on fire, then they shoot bullets into it. And you can kind of just see he's got the cape around him. Even though they don't show it, you can figure he's got the cape around him. You know he's going to get out of it. I think if they had done it now, with a budget, you'd see kind of like in Batman where the cape hardens or he's protecting himself. I mean, I think they could do a lot with this if they wanted to reboot it or rebirth it, whatever.
It needs to.
I mean, I kept thinking, like, put Rey Mysterio in this.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Why not?
Absolutely. All right, so you guys had fun. We had fun. We got to find something else to substitute for this.
Don't worry about it. We're on it.
Okay.
And we will. There's going to be a switch up for next week, and we'll talk about it. We had already kind of discussed it. We, of course, have to have. We got to go back to our Kung Fu Theater because I missed that this week.
Okay.
Shaw Brothers.
All right, so.
But they could turn into panthers, Richie. They could turn into panthers.
I love that. I thought they looked so cute with the hat thing on. And they're out there in their little gloves. And then they got the just awful fake teeth.
The fucking little
fake teeth. And I was like, oh, that is so cute. I got it. I know. A little warm hat. And she's a panther.
It's kind of like the costumes when your kids are little, and you put it in. You're gonna be a you're gonna be a panther for Halloween, and you put that costume on.
When the girl killed herself,
I deserve nothing but that for what I've done.
And she jumps out the window.
And then she just runs and jumps out the window.
Oh, it's over. He just looks out the window. It's over.
The other thing was kind of odd, too, that was the little girl that sleeps with the sword just in the middle of her chest.
Yes. She never woke up.
She was actually up, in, like, in the middle of the movie, she's walking around or talking to them, and then the next time you see her, she's back.
It's like a doll. It's like a teddy bear.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a damn bare blade. It was like it was in the scabbard. I mean, you know. It's not like it's going
to
cut her.
To scare him off. Whoa, it's there. Gotta go.
Yeah, and that's... Holds up the sword. I can do it. Oh, I will tell you everything. Damn the sword.
You always left your kids with a full sword when they went to bed at night, right?
Sure.
Right, Brandon? You slept with a full sword on your chest?
No, he had an axe.
I have an axe. I have swords.
There
you go.
See? Right next
to
everybody sleeping
with them.
So when
I'm killed in the middle of the night, this is evidence.
And they find an armory worth of melee weapons inside your body?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is just a great movie.
All right. Well, we've been on that journey. I mean, where do we? What do we do? We're going to rate this one. We're going to compare it to the other two or the other four.
You know what? I think we just say all four together.
Okay, all four together. Rich, you've seen two.
I saw one.
Mike, you saw one. You guys were entertained. We were entertained. We need to bring back this genre. So Hollywood, if you're listening, bring back luchador movies.
Yes.
Let us know what you think. All right, so we've been following along with the latest offering on the Disney app for Star Wars, and that is The Bad Batch. And we just watched episodes 7 and 8 entitled The Clone Conspiracy and Truth and Consequences. And we have been regularly complaining that this doesn't have an overarching storyline, and I kind of figured it was coming in because this is about midpoint through the season and stuff like that. So, in the Clone Conspiracy, there's not even a lot of... I don't think... Does the Bad Batch show up once in the first...
No, I wrote down they're not even in it.
Yeah. Right, so
no,
this is...
Yeah, they weren't in that
This episode. Was almost an episode of Andor where there were the political machinations of Admiral Rampart and Bail Organa and then this new senator with the Australian, the lighter Australian accent. I would gather she's was voiced by the same actress as...
No.
You nod it off.
Omega?
Lucy Hale.
Dr. Rich, the nodding, unless you're something's rattling in your head, the nodding doesn't show up on the audio.
That was my tick. no,
that's why
it
I
is
don't nod.
Two different voice actors.
Okay, well, I could have, but yeah, so we have one senator fighting for the rights of the clone soldiers in a very...
Choochie.
In a very reminded me of like a Vietnam type of a thing or something like that, and you've got a couple of clones that were on Rampart's Star Destroyer when they shelled Kamino.
Yeah.
So they're saying, hey, you know, he's responsible for this. It wasn't some ion storm or whatever. And when these type of shows get gritty, they get gritty because they had a clone assassin going around and clipping. Guys who were, you know, in the know on this stuff, yeah. And then you have Rex get involved at the very end of that. Rex brings in the Bad Batch in the second episode to go and steal the ship's data from Rampart's Star Destroyer. And they bring it to the Senate, the Imperial Senate, and it is for naught because...
Played right into the Emperor's
hands. Exactly.
Right into the Emperor's hands. They arrest Rampart. The Emperor shows up, and whoever does the voice for the Emperor, bravo for them, because they said...
It's Ian McDermott.
It is. It's the same guy?
Oh, it's him.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Well, okay. Well, that makes sense. It was like having James Earl Jones do Darth Vader. Yeah, so... Yes. But, yeah, the Emperor declares that, yes, the age of the clone is over. It is the age of the Imperial Stormtrooper. So... Oh. What do we think of this one, boys? This was pretty
just
cool.
Just to tie in voices and Star Wars, Mark Hamill has said he will never do the Joker again.
You're kidding.
No, because he...
Kevin Conroy.
Because Kevin Conroy.
Was yeah. his Batman, yeah.
Yeah, that was his Batman, so he's done. He will not do it.
Put in my, there put you in go. My audition tape, there then.
You better. You better. First of all, did the animation seem a little choppy to anybody else? It seemed a little off to me.
Yeah?
It did. And then I was waiting for Chuchi to see the Bad Batch because I wanted to hear her say, Teek!
Oh, I almost forgot. So we were just commenting on how Echo does nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. And then now he's gone.
And now he's gone with Rex.
So we're not going to talk about any of the other ones. Because who's the guy with the tattoo on his face? Hunter?
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't do shit either. He goes, oh, look, a clone was here.
What?
He's the leader.
And he went in
he's
that direction.
He's got a knife.
The tracker.
He's got a knife.
Knife.
He's got a
knife. That knife is amazing.
Yeah.
And worked for Crocodile Dundee.
But I kept looking at Chuchi going, first of all, her name is Chuchi. And that made me giggle through the whole thing.
Every time you say Chuchi, it sounds like someone who dated Fonzie.
Yes. Yes.
Chuchi Tuscadero.
But then she looked like Omega, older. I mean, they look like it could be her boosted mama.
And I thought they might do the whole thing where if Omega's a clone, maybe she was a clone of Chuchi, because then you take out Chuchi, you grow Omega, and the plan was, you know, with the tall neck people that would have made the clones, the
Caminos.
Caminos.
So with the El Caminos would make...
Only if you're Spanish.
The El Caminos would make Omega, so they would have a senator to replace in the Senate that would kind of advance the Empire's...
Wow.
Ooh.
Mike gave this one some thought.
That was, but that would be looking a little bit ahead.
Well, I was trying to figure out where this was going, because like you guys said before, this... seems to be just a season of, you know, disconnected episodes trying to build to something else. So I thought the first episode 7, was really boring for me. There was, I know you kind of like the behind the scenes.
Well, like I said, it was an episode of Andor almost.
Yeah, it was really boring. I think, you know, I think I nodded off for a couple minutes and had to rewind and say I missed something.
Oh,
I think I did, but.
No, you didn't have to rewind.
I didn't have to rewind. I kind of figured it out.
Well, you know what? The news around the net, amongst our peeps, is that was Slick from Clone Wars, who was arrested.
So I never watched Clone Wars. So who is Slick in Clone Wars?
He was the believer who was killing clones, and
he sounds like another.
Is that the one that
he was a nutty one?
You mean the guy with the clone assassin?
Yes.
Is that the guy that bit down on the?
Yes.
The guy who did the cyanide.
Yeah,
the cyanide capsule, for lack of a better term.
Yes.
Did anybody?
But he was in Clone Wars. They're saying if you're going to point to a clone trooper that would have done that, and a few things he said, like he was a true believer, and. There was something else, but the nondescript. Because if you looked at him in the Clone Wars, he would have been, you wouldn't have known.
Well, when the assassin first showed up, I thought, okay, this is Crosshair going.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
But then I thought it wasn't, because he started missing too frequently.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And Crosshair would not miss that frequently. So I knew it couldn't be him, and I had no idea about who this other clone could be. So
I didn't quite understand, because... Rampart obviously was the one who was in charge of the assassin, if it was that important to you, why wouldn't you use
Crosshair? Right.
Crosshair.
Right.
He's amazing. And you know that.
Because you would have to explain things. The assassin was a fanatic. See, now a fanatic you don't have to explain shit to. All you got to do is cut him loose.
But say, with Crosshair, this person don't. Good soldiers follow orders.
Right.
Need you to...
But Crosshair's the question.
Yeah, and would Crosshair's, you know, he's trying to assassinate an imperial senator.
Yeah.
Like, Crosshair's would go, wait a second, we work for them. You know,
that's I don't think they've established good soldiers follow orders. He'll shoot and kill anybody.
Yeah.
He did it in the last episode. Right.
He killed that governor. Yeah. He killed that rebel governor. He didn't even think about it. Yeah.
So I didn't quite understand it. I also didn't quite understand the need to wipe him. Well, this person doesn't even have a code.
Yeah.
I didn't quite get that, but...
But you said wipe him.
To take a whole episode to build up the next episode, because it sure seems like after 8, it's over. Like, this story arc is over.
Yeah. Right.
They had the two episodes together, because you couldn't watch the first one. 1 week and wait another week to go, is they gonna do anything this week?
Right.
So that's why they had them together, probably.
I actually liked 7.
I did too.
I did.
I wrote one word, Rex. And the fact that Rex was at the end of it, just at the end of it, made the episode for me.
Yeah.
Because Rex, but I, you know, we watched Clone Wars and Rex is...
I just couldn't get into episode 7. I wanted to see the Bad Batch. I wanted to see, you know, Hunter and Wrecker and Tech and... In episode 8, I kind of thought, here we go with another heist mission. You know, sneak in. They happen to be going to the center of the Galactic Empire. And I always, you know, Lance, you said this before, you like the characters that are the expert in their field, right? They're the best of the best. No one else can do what they do. And I thought, well, if anybody can get into the center of the Galactic Empire, be the Bad Batch, and I want to kind of see that. So I liked episode 8 much, much better than 7 for that reason, because I wanted to see how they use all their skills to get in there and get the data from the ship.
And then again, they tie it into Clone Wars Season 7 with the two sisters that own the garage.
Yeah.
So they brought them to that garage. Some friends, but they're out now. I think it probably was Slick from Clone Wars. Dave Filoni tends to like to do that. The one I'm excited to see is... what's her name that framed... Ahsoka. For the bombing of the Jedi Temple.
Oh, you mean at the end?
Yeah.
The later seasons?
The Padawan.
Yeah, and I'm blanking on...
Yeah, I'm blanking on her name. But she, I think, turns out to be an Inquisitor or something. She's got to pop up somewhere, because she was just a cool character, and she fought Anakin to a standstill, pretty much. I mean, he beat her ass at the end.
Was anybody expecting Omega, when she was left with the senator, that she was going to run off and do something on her own and get caught, and then they were going to have to...
Well, of course.
It's happened so many times, it's kind of like you're just waiting and expecting it to happen.
I couldn't believe nobody recognized
her. No one even questioned
it. No one questioned it.
Because
she's got the hat on.
Yeah, a little girl with you.
No, because Senator Choo Choo brings people in all the time.
Take a tour of the Senate.
Yeah, take a tour of the Senate. This is like bring your clone to work day.
Yeah.
Everybody has one of those.
That is.
But you know what I didn't like is Senator Organa's accent.
Voiced by Phil LaMarr.
Right.
And I agree with you. It was off. Right.
What I want to say,
Jimmy Smith is the
Jimmy Smith, but they made it like it was in our Panther Women, like whoever did the
yeah.
Oh, Senator Chuchi, would you like to get a burrito with me?
I didn't like it either. I noticed that.
Yeah,
it was the first.
He was
going to
get into his lowrider speed cruiser.
Yeah,
he's been doing his voice for forever.
He went way Mexican on it. Yeah. And I was just, what?
Well, I figured it would be him until I heard the voice because, you know, you see him on screen, you go, oh, it's Jimmy Smits. And then the voice is, what's going on? He was just in Obi-Wan, so he couldn't just
record it. you're already on like the studio set, like you couldn't just record it this or whatever. But I feel like you said, Phil Lamar's been doing this for.
He may have asked for too much money, blah blah blah.
Yeah,
you know what it's or he all right, just
so
doesn't want.
I actually got to ask. So if by the rank of admiral, you think he's in charge of the fleet and Rampart being arrested? Does this pave the way for
Thrawn?
Yes. Okay, so you think Thrawn comes in because of the arrest of Rampart?
No.
Again, Dr. Rich, the nodding just it doesn't work on.
That's
on
my no. I don't think so because
politically his career is already going,
and he also when he was introduced, Thrawn was introduced in.
One of the novels, wasn't it?
In the novels, Heir to the Empire. Yep. By Timothy Zahn.
Correct.
And he was...
Whoa.
Yeah. He was... he was in charge of an outer fleet. It was almost like he wasn't a part of, and that's kind of how they explained it.
Yes.
And, but they made it, at that time, they made it a big deal because of his status, and he had the white uniform, and it... And he was a higher level admiral, but he was in charge of an outer rim secret.
Didn't they say he was like the left hand of Palpatine? Or the Emperor?
So I would be surprised.
Well, he was more like the pinky.
I would be surprised
if they
introduce him there.
I don't think they're going to bring him in.
Well, but maybe they will because they got to lead to Ahsoka going after him in the Ahsoka show. So if you set him up for people who may not watch Clone Wars.
Yes.
Yes, like Mike. Yeah. Raising your hand doesn't work on the...
You can't hear my shoulder? You can't hear my shoulder?
You got to put bells on these guys.
You're going to have to do some sound effects.
The clunk, 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 clunk.
Yes. I have a question for you guys. We talked about, when we reviewed episode 5, we talked about, or mentioned, the fact that they were doing certain things in some of these standalone episodes that were foreshadowing things to come. And Echo constantly was saying, we're not doing enough against the Empire. We're not doing enough. Did I miss something in episode 8? Were you guys shocked like, oh, he's like, I'm staying. And they all knew it. Like, okay, hey, goodbye. You know, and then he's just, I'm staying with Rex. But there was nothing in the episode.
No, there was nothing
that,
like,
that would lead to him leaving.
Like it just kind of was like, and they all knew it. And they weren't surprised by it.
No, I kind of was expecting him to do it eventually, but you're exactly right. There was no reason in that episode that would say, oh, you know, like the switch, okay, this is a part, I can't take this anymore, I have to do something.
There was no straw that broke the camel's back.
Rex was going on some sort of mission that, okay, I'm going to join him because this could mean more.
Right.
There was nothing like that.
And so it was just kind of all of a sudden just...
I'm out of here. Bye, guys.
But that's how he joined.
Yeah, he just left.
Suddenly he was going with the Bad Batch.
Well, but the way they did that, but the way they did that story arc, which was awesome, is how they saved him. They, you know, I thought that there was just a much, like, it made more sense for him to stay with them.
He's not doing anything. Yeah,
he literally wasn't doing anything.
He
did the most in 8. Because he plugged himself in, and then he was able to
say, he's almost like a walking RTD done.
But the brainy guy.
You got Tech.
Teek.
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 Goodbye, Iku.
Goodbye, Iku.
And Tick. Tick is just the, he's
Batman.
Well, but he's
Iron Man.
He makes Echo redundant in the group.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say. And just a total side thing, Michelle Ang, voice of Omega, Jennifer Hale, voice of Senator...
Chuchi Bimbo! Chuchi Bimbo!
I thought the purpose of Echo was really kind of to be the moral center of the group. He was like the conscious, like, you know, he was the one to question, like, are we doing the right thing? Are things... should we be doing more? I kind of think out of all of them, because the other ones were kind of like, even Hunter is like, he gets a little, okay, he's attached to Omega, but he's not looking at the bigger picture. I think Echo was the moral center of the group for what they were trying to do. But yeah, now that he's not there, I'm kind of interested to see like what decisions they're going to make, if they're going to not be influenced and have somebody there saying like, you need to fix this. I think, you know, Omega will take over. She's going to be forcing them to go on treasure hunting missions or whatever, right. You know, but
I thought
he was the one a little bit more like, I've been in battle. We've seen stuff. We know what's going on. You know, we need to do more against the Empire. So
I love the tone at the end of episode 8 when Palpatine came up though. And he just played them.
That was a good scene. Yep.
That was a great scene, because then he just went right into it.
Played
and
right into his hand.
And I said, we just witnessed, Filoni was able to do it. We witnessed how they were able to
get all the stormtroopers.
Get the stormtroopers. Now what I want to know is, what do they do with the clones?
Right.
Because that was always, we talked about that in the past when we've talked about the Clone Wars, is that you like the clones.
Yeah.
And now, what are they going to do with the clones? And this brings up the issue, you know, they're sentient beings. They have purpose. They have their own, they're individuals.
Yeah.
And so now what do you do with them?
Let them die. They're all...
well, plus, don't they age quickly?
Yeah. Yes. Their age...
Yes. And they did talk about that.
Yeah.
But still, it's the clones. This is the way that you answer that question, because you liked the clones.
Well... They had always said that the clone, or that the stormtroopers we saw from A New Hope were not clones.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, they were not the clones. And then, and people talk about the Clone Wars, but you don't have... Well, you did have... well, they're saying Captain Rex was in Empire.
Captain Rex was in Empire?
That's what they're saying. There's
Who are they?
They are the people who...
Seriously, who are they? I could say it too, but that doesn't mean shit.
You know what? I was not prepared right now to bring up evidence, so I did not know we were going to go in this direction. Oh, otherwise, man. I would have had things on hand. I don't know why you guys always want to push me. You push me, and I give you the answers, and then you come
you
at
don't.
Me
you give like you're Wolverine, and...
like you're fucking honey badgers, and I'm a fucking piece of old bird or some shit.
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
This is why when I was watching The Bad Batch, I actually, now I identify The Bad Batch with you guys, because because Brian is Wrecker.
No, he's Omega.
He's Wrecker. You are Tech.
He gets us in so much trouble. He's Omega.
Keith, you are Tech. Dr. Rich, you are Echo, and Hunter is the leader here. So
one that doesn't say anything. Just sits back there and goes, oh, my God, these guys.
And he's always got his knife ready because you don't know when he's going to snap at any moment.
Not to mention he cuts the shit out
of
this.
I cannot point a finer point on it. We're still digging this one.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's about, you know what, though? I wanted to just say, because everybody keeps saying they played right into Palpatine's hand. No matter what happened, you played into Palpatine's hand. And that was the point of the thing, is that no matter what they did, had they not gotten the evidence and had it not gone that way, you played into Palpatine's hands. He was going to win.
Yeah, he was winning.
He's
either way.
Always going to win. He only loses when, they even took that away, when fucking Vader kills him, but he doesn't.
Well, he had to win because we've seen the movies, so obviously he had to win.
Well, he won.
Exactly.
And then he won again.
I think that's the real gem of Filoni, is that you know these things are going to happen, and he still does it in a way that is entertaining.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And you enjoy it.
Yeah. But I'm sorry we missed Iku. Iku's gone. But we still have Tick.
All right, I'm cutting it off here.
The Three Old Geeks are now on YouTube. Check us out there, and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. If you can't find us, stop by our Facebook page to get a link. And while you're there, drop us a line and let us know what you think of the podcast. Tune in next week, same geek time, on all your favorite apps for all new, all different material. Thanks a lot for listening, and hey, keep on geeking on.